This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Congress is back in session today, and now they'll have to face head-on the question of how elected representatives will respond to the push from students at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School to do something about gun violence. On the other hand, the National Rifle Association has been calling for hardening schools to protect kids rather than increasing gun laws. The NRA likes the idea of arming some teachers, and today President Donald Trump reiterated his support for both ideas.
But we have to take steps to harden our schools so that they're less vulnerable to attack. This includes allowing well-trained and certified school personnel to carry concealed firearms. At some point, you need volume. I don't know that a school is going to be able to hire 100 security guards that are armed.
That's the president a little earlier today. Well, joining us now with some reaction is Congressman Michael Capuano. He represents Massachusetts 7th. Congressman, it's good to have you back.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. So let's get a bit of a political reality check here. I mean, the conversation across the nation outside of Washington has been very much about gun control. But how much of that, how present and urgent does that feel inside the halls of Congress?
I think it depends who you talk to. For instance, right now, we were supposed to be in for the whole week. But our Republican leadership in the House pretty much just canceled the last 2 days of meetings this week. They hide behind the fact that Billy Graham is going to lie in state, but that could have waited a day or two, and I don't know why we can't be in session while that's occurring, but so be it. So I think it depends who you talk to as to how important they see it. And many, almost all Democrats see it as a critical item that we've been waiting for years to actually be able to address.
Well, let me get your take on some of the specific proposals we've been hearing over the past couple of days. First of all, what about the idea that some gun control advocates are championing, which is banning those so-called bump stocks?
Long overdue. That's something I've been arguing for years now before people knew what they were, only because it's not that this was not a bump stock event, but it has happened in the past, and the first time it happened that I learned about it, I didn't know what they were, went online and actually posted a video several years ago of what a bump stock can do, and if I remember correctly, it's 800 rounds per minute.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I called for banning then. It seems nuts to have those out, so I'm glad that that's finally coming to the fore. And if we can ever get it to the floor of the House, I think it'll pass. And it certainly sounds like the president might be talking about doing something with that.
But well, yeah. I mean, in fact, just today he said he's going to, quote, write them out, right? He said bump stocks, we're writing that out. I'm writing that out. I don't care if Congress does it or not. Good. I'm writing it out myself. I'm not sure what he means by that. But
I'm not sure what he means either. But and I don't know that he can do it by regulation, but I have. Let's put it this way. My argument is always, if you're not sure whether you can do something, take the action and let the courts deal with it later on. So if the president takes action on this, I will congratulate him. And if we lose it in court at a later time, hopefully between then and now, Congress actually could do it by law. So we'll see. I certainly hope that action is taken, and whatever gets done will be a step in the right direction.
Okay. What about raising the age to buy certain firearms to 21?
That doesn't hurt. I don't know that that's going to be the critical factor. I mean, don't forget, these 18-year-old, 19-year-old kids can certainly join the military anytime they want, and they don't have to wait till the age of 21. I don't think it hurts. I'm not so sure that that's going to be the final, going to be the thing that really makes a difference. I'm open to it. I probably would support it, but let's see what the specific proposal is before we make a decision.
Congressman, the NRA has given you a grade of an F. I'm going to presume you wear that as a badge of honor.
I certainly do.
But they are a very, very, very powerful lobbying group, right? And just today, or in the past couple of days, the NRA, it's been 2 weeks since the Parkland shootings. And I think the NRA has a very studied and careful approach to this, right? Like they go quiet at first.
They always do.
And then after a while, we start hearing where their true priorities lie. And in just the past couple of days, they've been starting to say more clearly, or with total clarity, they will oppose any ban or any change in gun laws that they can in Washington. So tell me, I mean, how potent is that opposition today, even in the wake of all the advocacy, inspiring advocacy we've been hearing from the Parkland students?
It's very potent. The NRA is a very powerful group down here. I know everybody wants to think it's because of the money they donate. Certainly that is a factor. But that's a secondary factor. They don't donate the most amount of money in Washington. But what they do have, they have a very strong organization across the country. Now, most people in Massachusetts aren't aware of it. We don't see it because they're not very strong in Massachusetts. But when you get out to rural Pennsylvania and rural Ohio, They're very strong there. You'll see bumper stickers all over the place, an NRA member and the like. They vote. Their people get out there and they hold signs. They individually write checks, even if it's a $5 check. And they are, I won't say they're one-issue voters, but they, if there are any one-issue voters, many of them happen to be NRA members.
Mm.
So they are a powerful political organization, and to underestimate them, you do that at your peril.
So I want to ask you a question about a piece of gun legislation that the House did pass late last year, and I want to ask you a question about it from two sides, okay, of the same issue. And I'm talking about the Concealed Carry Reciprocity Act of 2017, which did pass the House, largely along party lines, and that would, you know, it's the idea that it would have allowed people with a concealed carry license, say, in New Hampshire, use that license, cross state lines into Massachusetts and use it. Now, that passed. It was a piece of gun legislation that was at the top of the NRA's legislative agenda that passed. So, you know, when sufficiently motivated, Congress has shown it can do something, right?
Yes, indeed. And it's usually the wrong thing. You know, that passed, and I think it was a horrendous piece of legislation. And again, it's not just New Hampshire. It's also people from New Mexico and, you know, any state in the country that obviously that means if you're visiting Boston and you've never been in a big city before and you have a concealed weapon to carry in the most rural parts of Montana, you could be carrying a weapon in Boston. And to me, that doesn't necessarily require any training. It doesn't require any socialization. In Boston, things are different than in rural Montana. It was just a bad piece of legislation across the board.
So here's the other side of that, though, because as you know, that legislation had a provision added onto it that would have strengthened the criminal background check system and mental health reporting requirements for background checks, exactly something that so many gun control advocates have been calling for with increased, you know, passion in the past couple of weeks. If it comes to this again, where the House is presented with something, I don't know if I want to call it a compromise bill, but a bill that would include some of the things that gun control advocates want, I mean, would you be able to vote for something like that?
No, no. It depends what the bill includes. I mean, in that particular case, no. That means you got millions of people coming to Boston and New York and Los Angeles that may have never been there before with able to carry weapons. The answer is no, I would not vote for that bill. But again, you know, I never say never because you never know what's going to be attached to a bill. But this is a classic example of how legislation is done, not just in Washington, but across the country, in state houses, in city halls. You never, almost never, get a chance to vote for a bill that is all good or all bad. It just doesn't happen that way. It does once in a great while, but usually it's exactly the situation you just named, that there'll be it's always some good and some bad. My job is to weigh how much good and how much bad and try to figure out which way to vote.
Mm. But let me push you on this, though, because sure. I think the idea of, I take your point, like getting a clean bill, clean in quotes, right, on any one side of an issue is an impossibility. But again, given the political reality right now in the House, Republican-controlled House, it's hard for me to imagine that you would land even in the middle of the gray area between the two extremes. So, you know, could you be faced with a situation where maybe a couple of things that gun control advocates want are put in a bill, and you still feel like you got to vote against it?
Again, the answer is yes. It depends. Every bill has some good and some bad. I would have to determine at the time how much good and how much bad. I've voted for bills that I didn't like certain provisions. The health care bill is a classic example. I didn't love every provision in that bill, but it was overall a good bill, so I voted for it, and I'm glad that I did. And it'd be the same thing here. If there was a gun control measure that came along, I would hope that I'd be able to vote for it, but would have to wait and see to see specifically what's in the bill. And who knows? Right now, I don't have a lot of faith that we'll get that chance, but I have better faith now because of these young kids down in Florida. They seem to be doing a great job keeping this issue alive and building national momentum. I hope they can stick with it, and I hope they can succeed.
Mm. Well, while I've got you just a couple more minutes, Congressman, I want to turn briefly to another issue that seems equally intractable. I'm talking about immigration and DACA specifically. Now, the Supreme Court has decided not to take up the DACA appeal, the president's DACA appeal, until it's gone through the appellate system. So that means that the program does remain in place for now after two lower courts blocked the Trump administration from ending DACA. But again, you know, the president was looking to end the program on March 5th. I mean, as Congress comes back into session, is there any hope that we can get a solution that doesn't have to rely on the courts for the ultimate arbitration?
Man, again, this is the problem we live with. If we can get a bill to the floor of the House that deals with this issue and this issue alone, I feel strongly that it would pass. Pretty much every Democrat, if not every Democrat, would vote for it, and many Republicans would vote for it. The problem is getting into the floor of the House. We need Republicans to help us force the majority to put a bill on the floor. And this is a basic civics lesson that most people don't understand, and I get it, is that in the House of Representatives, in the United States Congress, people are not allowed to simply offer an amendment to get a vote on it. It has to be allowed on the floor by the majority leadership. And they have yet, thus far, have refused to put any bill on the floor of the House, even though they know that it would probably pass.
Well, okay, but is there a way, but why though? I mean, the president has said, "You give me a bill, I'll probably sign it." I mean, I'm wondering, is it the Freedom Caucus here that's the big obstacle? What is the if there's so much bipartisan support, what's the obstacle?
Well, it is partially the Freedom Caucus. It's a matter of, I mean, with the bipartisan support, we could do something called a discharge petition. I think if we had one, you'd find that almost every Democrat would vote for it, would sign it. But we need 218 people, which means we need, I think it's 24 Republicans. And that is just, it's never happened. And that being the case, it's unlikely to happen now. I mean, I think especially with this this pressure relieved a little bit because of this court decision, I think that right now this is going to take a little bit longer to deal with. If that pressure had been kept on, if the court had said, okay, yeah, as of March, whatever date it was, we are going to end the program, I think the pressure would be on. Right now, in Washington, D.C., very little happens until the very last moment that it must happen. And right now, we have a little extra time, which I don't think is right, because these young people are now living with the sword of Damocles hanging overhead. Mm-hmm. It's inappropriate. I think it's inhumane. But at least at the moment, they can breathe a small and temporary sigh of relief.
Well, that's Congressman Michael Capuano. He represents Massachusetts 7th. Congressman, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
We'll be back. This is Radio Boston.